What I really want to talk about is, of course, the Ontario Citizens Assembly last week met again and voted, and there's 100 members of that body.
104.
One per riding, is it?
Yeah, and then they have two Aboriginal representatives and two other...
Okay, that would make it more like 106, but whatever. There is about 100 to 110 people in the Ontario Citizens Assembly. The actual number is mostly irrelevant. But it voted and overwhelmingly in favor of introducing a referendum to change the current electoral system, which means that Ontario will have a province-wide election in the first time in the better part of 15 years, actually in 15 years, unless there's been one
referendum.
Since
there hasn't been a referendum in Ontario, I think, since like 1920.
Yeah,
really?
Yeah, it was on prohibition.
Yeah, because that one on the Charlottetown Accord totally didn't count.
That was a national referendum.
Yeah, but it was a referendum in Ontario.
No, but it was in all of Canada.
Provincially mandated. How's that?
Okay. All right. So I will say that people haven't gone to the people in Ontario exclusively have not voted in a referendum since like the 1920s.
There you go.
But to be clear, they have voted in referendums.
How about you say it's been a really long time, as in longer than I can remember, and we'll be set.
That's fine. That's cool. So in October, you'll be voting, if you're greater than the age of 18 and a Canadian citizen, about whether or not you should accept a new system of electoral electioneering, which would be a multi-member plurality system, which means there would be 90 or so seats that would be elected, just as we do now, and then another 30 or so seats, which
39,
would be
39, I think.
Yeah, which would be elected proportionally based on and this is where it starts getting arcane, province-wide closed list. And what that means is that the parties themselves would select who appears on those lists and in which order. So presumably, like for the NDP, Howard Hampton would be at the top of the list, and then according to their preference about how they want people elected or their chances of being elected, they will put them down that list. This is different than a open list in which you have a bunch of people on that, like, are, you know, NDP or Liberal or Conservative or whatever, right? And then you can rank them in the order that you see fit. Usually open lists are sort of, there's a number of regions, so Eastern Ontario as an example might be one. So you'll have, if this were to be accepted, you'd have two ballots, one which would just be your normal vote for me, your local candidate one, where you pick one person, and the other where you tick the party that you want to win. And and what the extra proportional seats will do is they'll top people up to bring their seat count closer to their popular vote count. So if you're if the Liberals, as an example, were to get 60% of the regular seats, or the traditional single-member seats, but 40% of the vote, they are unlikely to get any of the plurality seats. But in contrast, if the NDP were to get 10% of the riding seats and 20% of the vote, then they'd be brought up somehow. It's not a perfect system. There's overlap and all that. But it usually is. What it certainly means is that you'll see smaller parties or moderately sized parties have more representation than they currently do now.
Especially geographically dispersed parties.
Especially. So ideologically based parties or single-issue parties would be much more likely to get to see some popular support. So it's entirely reasonable to expect the Greens. I think there's a 3% threshold to get considered. But like, it would be reasonable to expect that the Greens would elect at least one or two members of parliament, provincial parliament. And it would also be reasonable to expect that the Liberals would, or that whoever wins the election would not form a majority government and would have to form some sort of brokerage coalition.
Yeah, I think that they did the models for the previous election, it would be a minority Liberal government. I think it's fantastic to have one vote for a party and one vote for a candidate. I know, Mike, when we worked in the provincial polls a couple of years ago, at that point, the party was not on the ballot. It just was the candidates' names, and I got asked, I'd say, about 75% of the time which candidates lined up with which parties. And that's a bit of a biased sample because that's in student housing, so you have a lot of transient people who aren't going to know the local issues. But I really do think that partisanship and ideology certainly drive voting patterns more than locals do. But what's important about this system is that it allows you to have it both. If you know, you certainly have a provincial party preference, but you feel strongly about a local person or based on their involvement, that you can really have your cake and eat it too. And particularly because provincially there isn't the same kind of – we see some effects of this at the federal level with the quota of funding per vote that, you know, even if you know that your riding's a blowout, then you still decide who you vote on in the losers based on who you want to have your $1.75 per year. But at the provincial level, nothing like that exists. So really there is – you really could vote, you know, in a two-way race in a riding and then still vote for a third or fourth party on the provincial level. Certainly closed lists aren't ideal, but I think that the Assembly does have a bit of a point when they're concerned with women and underrepresented groups. This is the best way to get them into the Assembly. But what's interesting is that I think that if there's a real public desire for open lists, I think that the parties will be responsive to that. And you can even have a primary-like system. Certainly in a tangentially related election in the Palestinian Authority, I know that while Fatah, the PLO, did closed list in the last election, Hamas ran open lists, and some people credit that to their success. And let's not open that can of worms. But you could see the parties yeah. running open, like de facto open lists.
Well,
themselves.
There's nothing stopping a party from distributing how it ranks its lists itself. Like, there, if well, the province will have it'll be a province-wise closed list. There's nothing stopping, like the Ontario NDP, as an example, from breaking up their 100 or their 39 members. That could potentially be into three or four regional blocks and having a nomination contest just as they would. Like, you would have nomination meetings anyway, and to me that's perfectly reasonable. The interesting thing, and you mentioned women, is that in it, and I mean, one of the things that you've heard in the leadership race for the Liberals is, you know, how do you get more women? And one of, like, the most woefully inadequate sort of goals is to have 30% of nominated candidates be female. and I mean, to the credit, they're actually putting, you know, prominent females in winnable ridings now. So Martha Hall Findlay is appointed in Willowdale, which, you know, is pretty much close to just guaranteeing that she'll be elected and so on. I mean, in those countries that you see which have close to a proportional number of women in the respective legislatures, it generally comes with a proportional system, usually where they have either a mandated alternating gender structure on the list or alternately where parties have opted to do that for practical reasons. And I think that this is one of those situations where we could see those things. And, I mean, we can argue till the cows come home about the merits of balancing things that way. But in the end, like, I think this is I think that everyone can accept that gender is an important thing to represent in a legislature, and that on a practical level, this is one of the best ways of achieving that while it's still at the same time still being democratic.
I think the thing about that, though, is that if you look at sort of countries, I think it's more getting in terms of getting minority and gender involvement within politics. I think it's more the political culture within a particular place, because you look at places like Israel and Italy, who have some of the lowest levels of female participation within their legislatures, yet both have essentially a strictly PR system, which in political theory is supposed to encourage.
I didn't say it's a perfect system. I said that that in those areas where you have a greater representation of women, that usually it comes from, like, Norway's an example where they require that 50% of the list be female, right?
Yeah, well, I think it's the problem with that is that you sort of focus on these sort of the structural changes, when I don't necessarily think that's what should be focused on if you want to look at getting gender and more women involvement in politics. I think what you need to focus on is sort of changing that attitude within the political culture, and for whatever reason, like, there's cases of where, you know, you just don't have women candidates elected. I think that those are the issues you have to look at, and while changing sort of when changing the political electoral system might achieve sort of a bump up in numbers a little bit, I think is that you have to sort of look at the broader underlying issues that there, and don't just blame it on having our current system.
Well, I think the benefits of some kind of I use the term tokenistic and not pejoratively, but just that it is a certain representation of that. I think that there is a wag the dog effect in politics where and I think if you look at the Nordic experience, where there was very aggressive affirmative action programs, which were unpopular in many ways, but once people got used to the idea of women in politics, then they were more likely to actually hand them their vote. So I think that the way ideally what this would work then is that when we see that, let's say, half of the 30%, so 15% of the Ontario legislature would be composed of women, then the idea is that you would have sort of an an effect of where people would get used to that, and then in turn they would start electing them in ridings and not just in a list system. Certainly I think that I don't know anything about the Green Party of Ontario's policies, but if there was one party that I would suspect would do a 50-50, I would suspect it would be the Green Party. I know that in New Zealand, as Wikipedia told me the other day, that they have a co-leaders, and they are mandated to always have one male and one female leader. They also have only ever won list seats in New Zealand, which is a mixed an MMP system.
So. Apparently in Germany there's an active campaign in the process, because they also have an MMP system, where the Greens say, like, that's okay, give whoever you want your vote for the riding seat. Like, we're cool with that. Like, we're not going to win, but, you know, give us your vote for the riding one, for the party one. And then they usually get their sort of 10 or 12%, and then
makes perfect sense for their they have a post geographic ideology, and it's just not going to be linked to ridings.
The more interesting thing, just before we go to a break, is that to me anyways, that I mean, we have a winner take all mentality in politics in Canada, that if you win an election or you get the most seats, like look at the last federal election where there was, you know, a 5 or 6% difference between popular vote and a 24 or 22 seat difference in seat count. But we just assume that the Conservatives have the ability, because they have, you know, two more, you know, even if it was just one more seat than the other guy, they have the ability to dictate all of federal policy. And there's no sort of real tradition of sort of, and we can see it in the House right now, of everyone sort of getting along and trying to figure out where the consensus in the issue is. And one of the advantages of MMP, and we talk about, you know, federal first past the post, the current system being more decisive and producing majority governments, but, like, there's no reason why parties can't stop acting like children and figure out where the common ground is. Like in any other country in the world, there would be a governing coalition of liberals and conservatives, because in the end, they both like, you know, policies like making sure that the economy works well and growth and that sort of thing. And there's so much agreement on so many issues. And we can see just how, I mean, I support things like Status of Women Canada, but comparatively when it comes to how government operates, it's small potatoes.
Well, does anybody think, I just can't see anybody telling me with a straight face that there's a problem with decisiveness in Canada. You know, like certainly out of the Anglo-American Commonwealth sphere, I think that we have, you know, the most party discipline, and combine that with majority governments, then, you know, like, really, I just don't think that that's been a great benefit, and I don't think that that's been something that we need to hold on to as Canadian. The most interesting thing I think about the Citizens' Assembly is how that the Citizens' Assembly in British Columbia came up with also recommended a change. I think like anybody who spent half a year studying electoral systems would, but they recommended single transferable vote, which is in many ways completely different than MMP. Well, it's not different, that it's still better than first past the post. But I think when you talk, when you look at citizens' assemblies processes, where did that difference come from in the two assemblies? And I don't think that there's enough of a political cultural difference. And I wonder if it's just more to do with the dynamics of who's in that assembly and how it's run. A lot like when you look at juries, you know, people talk about how one or two a dominant personalities can sort of.
Yeah, I thought it interesting. And it probably comes down to who is sort of advising them too. Just before we go to the song, I do think that it was interesting that they went with the Citizens' Assembly. You would usually expect that the government would strike a commission and that they'd meet with people and then they report back.
New Brunswick did that.
Yeah, and that I think that in many ways produces just as effective a result. It's a question of whether that's a politically tenable result, though, especially since it goes to a referendum and needs a supermajority of 60%.
Ridiculous supermajority.
It's okay to join the country with 52% of the vote and theoretically leave the country with 50% plus one, but to change or to form a government with 26% of the vote, but it is not okay to change the
electoral system. You can mess with the federation, just don't mess with our.